We are up to Simen Mem Vav, Halacha Chof Hey. We're going to go back soon. We have to do a few of the Shiurim of Halacha. We'll come back and do a few of them, do that soon. But let's first go forward for a few moments. A very interesting Halacha. Ein Lashon Isa B'Cholav, you're not allowed to knead dough with milk. Everyone knows this Halacha. You're not allowed to make milchitika bread, which looks like regular bread, because someone can mistakenly think it's parif, and you will eat it with meat. So ein lashon isa b'chol v'yaladi dough with milk. B'shema yochal pasa must he make complete the bread with basar. V'im lash kol hapasa sura afilu le'ochlo levada. If you need dough with milk and you make it into the form of a regular bread, there's no difference between it. It's identical to all of the breads in the store or in your home. It's asur b'achila, even though it's 100% kosher, and you know that it's milchix, and you're not eating it with meat, because you may in the future be nichshol and eat this piece of bread with meat. It is also afil levad gzer shem yochla in basar v'im hoya davar muot. Let's say it's a small amount, the amount of milk, amount kedei achilas pam achas. It's just one small roll which you can eat in one shot. Oh sheshina, this is the ikur. This is the head to what we have today. You have many different types of breads today that are available that are oud. If it has a different shape, does not look like a regular loaf of bread.
On any bread that's dairy.
Even if it has a different shape?
No dairy.
A different tzura? Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Oy sheshina tzura sapas, sheyehei nikur. It is 100% noticeable to any person that is shalolachla im basar muta. That is the heter. The chayin hadin im lash isa im shuman shal basar. The same thing is the other way around. Let's say you want to go and have and make a dough, a challah, that has some flavor, some schmaltz to make it fleishiks. Ve'ein, it's forbidden. Ve'ein lefo shum pas im tzapichis. You're not allowed to cook bread with a tzapichis, means a dish, a milk dika dish. Tzapichis is what? Tzapichis advash, some type of dish, milk dika dish, or a dish that's filled with meat, even though you're not cooking it directly with meat. You're cooking it with a tafshil. Okay, this is one step down. The previous example was when you actually pour milk into the dough, or you pour fat, fleishiks, into the dough. That's certainly awesome. You've made the bread milchiks of fleishiks. Here, I'm not making milchiks of fleishiks. I'm making it's been cooked together with something, with a dish that is milchiks of fleishiks. So it's not the actual basar. It's only going to absorb a flavor of something which itself is a flavor of meat. It is also forbidden. So the chayshinon shema yozov menachem, because even though technically there's nothing really wrong, if you're cooking bread together with a fleishik dika dish, so there the bread really itself is parif. It's just you can't eat the bread together with milk, or the vice versa. But it's in itself, there's nothing technically wrong with the object itself. It's forbidden because of a gzera. Maybe in the process of cooking the bread together with a dish that's fleishik, some of the juice that's basar will flow into the bread and make the bread actually basar. Or maybe some of the milk in the dish that's milchix will flow into the bread and make it actually milchix. Shema yozu benachem oy min ashum tachas apas v'imzov tachtav dina kilu nilashimo diyosu loch lo afilu. Then the piece of bread becomes asur to eat it afilu levada. Now, what's very interesting about this halacha is it's an out of this, not ikar hadin. But let's see, a lot of these takeout stores, people assume that all the products are parif, and they usually are. If you have a store and you have a takeout, you have it's a fleishik takeout store. But most of the products, all the kugels, the potato kugel, the lakshon kugel, and all the salads, and all of these things, 99% of these, even though they're cooked in ovens that are fleishiks, they are parif. And everyone pretty much goes with the assumption that you can eat these things alone. You should not eat it together. Don't take a lakshon kugel that you buy in a fleishik dika takeout store. Don't eat a piece of lakshon kugel with milk. Don't have it with milk. But you don't have to wait 6 hours, right? Isn't that the assumption? So let's say the owner of the store will decide on his own, you know what, today I'm going to make my lakshon kugel, I'm going to add a little schmaltz into the lakshon kugel. And listen, this is a fleishik ticket takeout store. Buyer beware. Buyer beware. So that is not a good idea. That is, you really are touching upon the same theme of this halacha. People work with assumptions that certain things are parif. Bread is the classic example. Bread is by nature parif. It is Chazal went so far to say that if you take a small amount of milk and you put it into your bread and it's not bottled, there is of course exceptions and an accident happens. If a small amount of milk falls in, so if it's bottled, then you don't have to ask the bread. But if it's not bottled, the bread is kosher. It's 100% kosher. But you're not allowed to eat the bread. The bread is considered to be treif, according to Chazal, because of this gezerah. So by extension, and you can't go make a new gezerah. Obviously, you can't make new gezerah in halacha. By extension, the person should keep in mind that people have a certain assumptions. You make dishes. If you're running, you're running a show. You have a you're making a potato kugel, and you get sending it to all your neighbors. You know, they're going to assume that it's mochaks because that's what the standards are today. Now, they're going to assume that it's parif. They're going to assume that it's parif. They're also going to assume that it's parif cooked in a fleishik oven, right? And fleishik kalim. Fine, that's a reasonable. But don't do anything. Don't do anything that's going to cause someone else to be nichshol in what you would not expect. That is a natural. What?
Yeah, you all have signs that say all our salads are becheskes fleishik.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Even the Mashgichim insist that they put it up. Yes. Even though they need to be fired.
Okay.
They all have signs that say becheskes fleishik. Because they don't know the guy may use a knife, whatever, so they might put up a sign like that.
Alright, let's go further. Next halacha. Chav Zayin. Now, we're going to go a lot of the halachas. One more halach, Tanu, Shazah, Bekarka, Shlosh, Shum, Neicholav, a Tanu which flows in the bottom of the, on its base, fat or milk, Tzorchel, Hesek, Kadin. Kadin, you have to kasher it, because if there's going to be zeh, if you have on the bottom residue, you have a dish, you want to use another, we discussed last week, you want to use another for milks, and you cooked last night fleishiks. And in a modern day oven, where it's wide, but some of the fleishik spilled onto the floor of the oven, and you have not yet cleaned it out. If you're going to heat up the oven, there's going to be zeya. And that zeya, we learned yesterday, has a status of basar. If you're cooking something that's milchiks, you're in a lot, you want to be lenient and cooking it in one oven milchiks, you want to wrap it up, but there's zeya coming off from the thing that spilled from yesterday, you have a very big problem. Zeya has the status of wherever it came from. If it's basar, it's basar, it's chalchov. And one halacha I forgot to mention last week is, zeya is only a problem if it's yad soledespo. There are many, many leniencies in the kashrus industry of zeya, because the time the zeya gets to where you are, it's not yad, and it's very easy. It doesn't take much to transform zeya steam from yad soledes to not yadless.
A big oven,
even a small oven. It's very, like, for example, let's say people it has this, there's a common shah, they have cholent and they want to add water to the cholent from an urn. Okay, so you have a cholent, you have an urn, and the cholent is a little bit too. You want to take it. So not no bishul problem. You're finished. You take it off the oven, and it's already completely cooked. You just want to ain bishlach habishul. Turn, open up the urn, and water will pour into the cholent, and you'll have a little bit more. In the process of doing so, there is steam coming from the cholent. And when the steam comes from the cholent, that steam is going right into the plastic or the metal, what kind of whatever urn you have, of the urn. So that steam is making your urn fleishiks. Now, in the afternoon, you want a cup of coffee, some water, or during the weekend, you can add milk into that coffee. You got a big problem. Because the zeya of the cholent has come into. So the answer is, so this is a common question that people ask Rabbanim, when I've read in the books. And the answer is 99% of the time when people do that, the time the Zeya gets to the plastic, it's not a good idea, of course. You shouldn't do that. You should do it. You shouldn't allow the Zeya to go that way. You should take it, fill up some cups. You want to put some water, so take a cup, fill up a cup, pour the cup into the pot. But if you do it, you're desperate. If 99% of the time in these situations, the time the Zeya gets to the urn, it's not Yatzla the spell. Because wherever you're holding the pot, you're not holding the pot so close that the steam that's touching the urn is so hot, you put your hand there, you get burnt. It's not. You'll withdraw your hand. That's why it's not a problem. The reason why it's a problem in ovens is because even though the Zeya itself is not Yatzla Ledispo, but when it hits the top of the oven, the top of the oven is Yatzla Ledispo. So that once again converts the steam back into the status of Yatzla. If you just have steam rising, and the steam that's rising is not Seledis, but that's okay. But when the steam rises, and although the steam itself is not Yad Seledis, but it hits the surface, it hits the wall of it, and the wall, the top wall, the top, the roof of the oven is burning hot, is Yad Seledis, but then it becomes a problem. Then when the steam touches and condenses and turns into bubbles, those bubbles have the status of wherever it came from, and if it drips down into another dish, so if you have milchiks, and you have steam that's fleishiks, and the fleishiks drips into to milchiks, then the product is treif. Yes, but what, it doesn't matter when it gets to the top,
right,
and turns into a liquid, good, and the roof is hot.
Now it's coming back down.
That turns that liquid again back into its status of basar. If the source of the steam is meat, and then the steam rises.
Right.
And the steam now, in the air, it's not Yad Seledis, because it's very wide. But then it makes contact with the roof, and the roof is Yad Seledis, right, that once again turns that steam back into basar.
But it's coming back down in the air again.
So it comes back down, but it's liquid. It's liquid of basar. Liquid of basar. And then if you have the dish itself, if you have a dish that's nearby, that's milchiks, milk, and the milk and the dish is hot, and it comes down. So then that's also yatzla. So it's treif. It goes back and forth, right? So it's going through three stages. It's hot. Steam is cold, then it's hot, then it's cold, but when it reaches the dish, you have cold droplets of meat mixing into a dish that's milk, and then the dish itself is hot, and it mingles.
What if the dish
what
is
happens?
If the dish, so it's not ideal, obviously, you're not going to go mix milk and meat, but it's not going to make a treif, necessarily.
But I know you asked this, but it's what, about 120 degrees?
Some say less even, 90.
I read Rabbi Rabia has 128 degrees.
There are different opinions, even less, even 90.
120.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me ask.
There are different opinions. What halacha Moshe, I think, is more. I don't remember.
Yeah, so Rabbi,
I didn't look in my direction.
120. Okay. Fine. Okay. What?
Can you look in my direction?
Yeah.
What happens? That depends how high the roof is,
As long as it's not Yad Seledis. As long as it's not Yad Seledis, it's okay. Alright, let's go further. Halacha Chav Zayin Tanush. So we did the Radio Chav Zayin. Let's go to Halacha Chav Ches. Halacha Chav Ches, a lot of these halachas are not a Gelacha Lemaisa. We're not involved in these things. We'll just run them very, very quickly. Tarnagoylem Misoy Rasim Nohagim Lachlam. So they would somehow. What's the translation for Mr. Asim?
Correct.
Castrate the chickens, and by doing so, they would do it for their own purposes, but they would very likely make the bird into a treifa. So of course, I don't think this is done today on the farms where they manufacture, they mass produce birds, but in ancient times it was done. And if the Tanagol had been Misarasim Nohagim L'Achlam, we assume the farmers, the people that are doing, know what they're doing, they're not going to inadvertently make these birds into treifos. It's very easy. You just make a cut in the wrong place. The bird in halacha is called a treif. That's why you have so many complications today. Everyone knows with the cows, with the milk, all the different stories, the milks, because they do different types of surgeries on the cows today to release gas, and these surgeries involve making holes in their intestines, in their stomach, and if it's not done the right way, I think of Moshe already passing that the way they do it is okay. It's not a direct, it's not a foolish. They go in on from the side. I don't know all the details, but these things are problematic, but we assume, according to Kitzur, we assume it's okay. Mishum shel soimchem de mistama ho oived koy chav hamesaris hu umon uboki badaver is an expert and he knows what he's doing. Shlo yaseh betfira ezeri usa bebinayim by through his stitching, whatever they do, they're not going to make a hole in the stomach, which would make the birds into a tray. But if you look at a bird and you discover something that's not right, it's not set properly, whatever that means. When they would force feed birds, shedoykrim or some tachas kanfeim, they would go and they would make a hole under their wings. B'machat uchadoyme kedei sheyis napach habosar should look fat v'seireena shmenos. And the problem by doing so is you might make the bird into a treifa. The yesh b'zeh she'elas chacham imhein kasher solo. Period. V'chein behema asher l'pamim machmas roiv achila mis takenes urifurasa. What is the refua? She'doikrin oisa b'marze neged hakeres. I do this today, right? It's something along these lines. There's too much gas, and it becomes a sakana, and they make a hole in its stomach to release the gas. Making a hole in the stomach can potentially make the animal into a treifa. Yesh b'zeh. We mentioned before, that's one of the new things today of Chol of Yisrael. Chol of Yisrael, we learned Chol of Yisrael. The study of Chol of Yisrael is only a question of, is there a Jew who owns the animal? Is there a Jew watching that being milked to make sure that the guy did not add pig milk, did not dilute the milk with non-kosher milk? Today, in this generation, 21st century, Chol of Yisrael has much more to it, because all of the Chol, not all, but many of the Chol of Yisrael companies make a deal with their non-Jewish counterparts that when they have cows that have these questions, have illnesses, where they're subject to different types of treatments, which are questionable. So b'shas atchak, even not b'shas atchak, the Gedolei Yisrael of Paskin, that it's mutter. You can do different type of techniques, and it's not a treifa. Not every poskim is so thrilled with the techniques that are being done. If it's really according to halacha, and the Gubadruba, we rely upon this. But just for an extra layer of hidur, many of the Jewish companies have an arrangement with the Goyim that any animal that is problematic will switch. You'll keep that cow for your production line, and we'll take for our production line only the cows that have not undergone these procedures. So Cholavi, when you buy today Cholavi Yisrael, not only are you buying milk that has the Mila, that you know for sure it was, you don't have someone was watching that no pig milk was added to the milk, it's also likely from a cow that did not undergo a medical procedure which needs to come on to a psak halacha that it's kosher, it's not a problem. It's an extra. Not necessarily. OUD, I don't think so. I'm talking about OUD. OUD is Nachal of Yisrael. OUD.
No, it doesn't extend.
I don't think so. I highly doubt it. Highly, highly doubt it. Only the real Hamisha Chol of Yisrael. Even Chol of Yisrael, not Muchok. There are different types of Chol of Yisrael. Just because it's Chol of Yisrael doesn't mean it's really any different. It means that it's kosher.
It's kosher.
It's kosher. They didn't add everything today needs hechsher because of food technology. They add even to water. They'll add things that you'll be shocked to learn. They add things that may not necessarily be kosher.
So condition one that you mentioned is OUD does cover.
Of course, OU is OU. If OU means they have determined that there's nothing that's non-kosher in this product, and according to their guidelines, even if the animal has gone through some type of medical procedure, it's kosher. Rybelski is a very big, this comes in every couple of years, where they go and someone writes, oh, look what they're doing to all the cows. Not even called cows. What are they called? What do they call these animals?
Bovines.
So they a lot of these animals have this swelling in their stomach, there's no excess gas. All the time, Rav Moshe passing on this. And they regurgitated over and over, always looking for trouble. Always looking for trouble. The bugs also, supposedly, was an old Shiloh. Wasn't the bugs always looking for trouble? There's, it says here in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, there's an excess of gas. So they take, they actually make a hole. So you look at Shulchan Aruch, it says you make a hole in the stomach. This is aleph beis, it's a trefa. So why is it kosher? Shabelsky explains the reason why it's kosher, because they don't go make a hole like you just make a hole. They, there are many layers in the stomach. Yeah. And they make the hole, they go in on an angle. It's not zek neged zek. That's a heter. So that's fine. So the Rabelsky pass, Rav Moshe pass, Rabelsky pass, that's not what it means, Shulchan Aruch, it's not in the foolish, it's mutter. So some people are not so happy. They don't want it, they don't even want it that it should be a hole that's not mefulish. I don't know all the details. So to accommodate these people that don't even want that there should be a hole that's not mefulish, some of the Chol of Yisrael companies have an agreement with their non-kosher counterpart. We'll take the animals that did not undergo this medical procedure. You'll take the animals that did. And that way, when our clientele will have an animal, milk that came from an animal that the Shiloh was not even asked. So it come now. This is just one example. From what I've heard, there are other examples. I don't know the details, so I don't know. You have to look into this. But I've heard there are other interesting Shilohs that have come up over the years. This did not necessarily exist at the time of Moshe, because things are always changing. And anytime there's a Shiloh, they attempt to have an arrangement with their non-kosher counterparts to take the better animals, or the animals that don't have these questions. So that means that today, Chol of Yisrael is a whole new thing. Chol of Yisrael in Shulchan Aruch in the early 20th century just meant one thing. There's a mashgiach that's watching. There's no taruvis of non-kosher milk with kosher milk. Today, Chol of Yisrael has a whole new meaning. It means it's a different type of animal. It's an animal that has less halachic complications. That's what it means today. It's a whole new world today.
The OUD is then, let me understand, because people ask me that question. Why do you have to bring this milk to Chol of Yisrael versus the OUD milk, and you can't get Chol of Yisrael in many cases down and down. Right. For example, my son can't get Chol of Yisrael and stuff. So the basic question of mixing of milk,
if you're relying on the OU, I don't know the issues. If you're relying on the OU, you're assuming that they are aware of all of the potential issues, all of the issues, and they are giving their stamp of approval that according to halacha, everything is okay. Which means treifa, that the animal's not a treifa. They didn't do anything in the animal that would make it a treifa. And there's no non-kosher milk mixed inside. And there's no non-kosher ingredients mixed into the milk, because they add all the stuff into the milk today. Go look very carefully. Today everything is a niche market. There's no such thing as regular milk anymore. It has to be this milk and that milk. Hey, we add these vitamins, we don't have this. We filter out this, and there's this fat and that fat. You can't even get regular milk anymore. When I was a kid, there was one milk, you know, the red milk. Today, they don't even have it anymore. Yeah. The milk that I drank as a child, cannot doesn't exist anymore.
So
everything now is the blue, right? The blue or the green. The green is really too much for me.
In essence, what you're saying is, except for the added feature of the shots in the stomach and all that with the animal that's pumped, there is no difference between the OUD, Hashkacha, and Chol of Yisrael.
There is a difference. Chol of Yisrael, there is a difference.
This new added feature you said about possibly they do some kind of medical procedure. Except for that, the basic concept, there is no difference.
I don't want this difference.
I'm confused.
Chol of Yisrael is actually watching.
No, the rabbi says
Chol of Yisrael, non-Chol of Yisrael, generally mean government supervision. Rav Moshe Feinstein's Chiddush. Government supervision is equivalent to Jewish supervision.
What are they adding to?
They did not add in any non-kosher.
They don't mess with the cows.
They don't add any. OUD means it's the animal's not a trefa. They didn't go in and make a hole that's mefulish. It means that they didn't add any non-kosher ingredients. But was there someone supervising the milking procedure? Definitely not. We rely upon the government for that. That's the only difference. Rav Moshe says the Baal Nefesh should be machmir. Rav Moshe personally say only drank Chol of Yisrael, even though he was the biggest advocate of Chol of Stam.
No, I thought he only drank it certain times of the year. I don't know if all the time he drank.
Okay, I don't know. There are different stories of Let's go further. Now we come to another halacha of the animals. We mentioned this shayla here. Halacha lam leigim lasas peres miru kochim. Fragrant fruits. Okay, is that the correct translation? Different spice fruits, different exotic fruits. Shenoisnim esaperes tzech tzeleches. They put the fruits in a container. Okay, what is the shalchu? I don't know what this word is. No one know what this is? Some type of part of the animal. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Bishalfuchis behema. But Meir, you know what this is?
It sounds like it's sugared fruit, you know, like you have slices of fruit that are sugared.
But what's the shalfuchis behema? They
put it into a bag, into animal's
hide or something.
Yeah.
Okay, but it appears that this animal's hide also has seems to give it some flavor.
It's kavush.
It's kavush in the but it seeps in the flavor of this hide of this section of the animal has an effect on the fruit.
It's like dried fruit. Look at it, dried sweet food. Look later.
Okay, let's see. V'kach ma'abid ma'asal l'tech ha'tanu cham. Then they put it into oven when it's ham. Sher yiruktu ha'peres, it should get sweetened or fragrant. The ingredients that they have added to these fruits that has somehow in the oven changes its taste. So what's the issue? The issue is to make sure that the heart of the animal, I don't know how much it's going to get today, if they do this, they tzrichim l'zor shedhei ha'shalfuchis mibhema kashera. Why? It's been kasher because there's no dam and there's no issue of chelev and all those issues. It appears that it's not a problem of chav basar. This part of the animal is not called basar, it appears. It's but it has to at least be kosher. I'm not familiar with this at all.
It's you ever see the old wine skins?
No.
They took animal hide and they put it into a sack and they filled it with wine.
With wine, okay. Okay.
But that was the cold. But here's the problem.
Okay, now we come to bugs. So we see here this halacha was quoted when the whole bug issue came about. Everyone was quoting the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And it was the eros and the horos she muchzakim sheish b'meim tuloim. Also, l'shtoisam ad she yisanu as something. Not allowed to drink the water. We'll literally do a whole show on this if I have time. It still is. Today, it still is. It still is. Today, all of the stores have. Also, l'shtoisam ad she yisanu as something. Not allowed to drink water until you filter the water. The afil b'diavn and bishlosam mayim yeish las. Even if you cook. By cooking it, so you're causing the bug to dissolve, it doesn't make a difference. It's still there. The bug is still there. Yesh le'asar, it is asar. V'chein asar, lishras b'mayim, elu basar, aladiach b'chem davar machol. Very chumra. You're not allowed to use this water to prepare your, to cook, to rinse your meat or food, because the bugs are going to remain. Ki atolom nidbakim b'machol, because it sticks to the machol. Now, over here in the bottom, in the Pesach Shuvos, he says, what about if you can't see the bug? Right, you can't see the bug. So basically, the rule is this is a rule which applies in many years halacha. Not everyone agrees to this rule. Is if you look at the water and you see a black dot, I don't see nothing. I just see I see a black dot. If I now take a microscope, magnifying glass, and I notice that that black dot is a bug, according to many, not all, many poskim that it is a full fledged sheretz hamayim, and it's also midiraisa with all of the stringencies of achilas shiratzim.
Am I mechuyev to buy a
microscope? No, you're not mechuyev. But the issue is, do you see? If you don't see something, if you see nothing, no, the naked eye. This is the rule. Every single thing you take water and you put under a microscope, the more you magnify, you will guarantee to find living things. Halacha does not recognize something which cannot be seen to the naked eye as a sheretz. That is 100% clear. If you have, of course, if you have a glass of water, and I look at the glass of water, I don't see a thing. It is kosher, muhudr. There's nothing to do. Oh, but I will go show you the magnet, I could show you that there are 5,000 bugs in this cup of water. It's nonsense, ridiculous. Now, let's say you see in the bug a water bug. You see a cockroach. You see the real deal, right? You see it. It's crawling. Can I drink it? There's nothing to talk about. It is awesome. So what is the dilemma, which everyone is struggling with? The dilemma is when you see a black dot. Is that a speck of dust? Or is that a bug? My eyes are not so great. The difference between someone who has a 20-year-old, the eyes of a 20-year-old, and the eyes of a 40-year-old. They're not the same. I see a black dot. I see something, I acknowledge, but I don't see any legs, a head. What's the stat? If I'll then take a magnifying glass, it's a bug. What is the halach? Is that an halach called machlekes ha-poskim? That's all I can say. All of the chumras today, the kopakads, 99% of the kopakads, you cannot see. The most you can see is a speck. The most you can see. You can't really see, unless you get lucky, you can actually see a very good set of eyes, you can see it walking around. Okay, so this is what it says. The Shevet Levi is the same, you have the same exact shaila when it comes to a lulav. It's a very common shaila with an S. Everywhere you go to the store, right? You go to Erev Sukkot, and everyone is sitting there with a magnifying glass. What?
You have the same with the lettuce, boidig.
Yes. Yet say only lettuce. Oh. Well, lettuce, that's a little bit different, because lettuce, it could be, if you know what you're looking for, you notice in front of your eyes, even the link crawling around. They're camouflaged. That's already different. When it comes to lettuce, and there it's more problematic, because it's not just seeing a speck. Sometimes you can really see the real thing. But you don't know what you're looking for. You don't know what you're looking for. You have to be trained. They're camouflaged. They look like the lettuce. They look like a fold in the lettuce. They look like the strawberry. You have to be trained. If you train to know what you're looking for, then there are cases where you could actually see a real sheretz without even a magnifying glass. But let's take another example. An esrog or a lulav. How come everyone is sitting with a magnifying glass? The halach is you hold the esrog at arm's length. That's pretty far. That's a lot further than looking at the water with the water coming out of the faucet. At arm's length. Do I see any problem on the esrog? No. You don't? It's okay. That's why 99% of the esrogim are kosher. So what's all this about? I see at an arm's length, I see a dot. That's so just because I see a very, very, very good eyes, and an arm's length, I see a teeny little speck. So just because you see a teeny little speck at arm's length doesn't necessarily mean that it's no good. So now, I'm going to take a magnifying glass to analyze what exactly am I seeing at arm's length. Sefer Torah. You called the Rav. I think there's a psul in the Sefer Torah. The two letters are touching. Or the letter is not touching. When you're standing at the bima and at a normal distance from the Sefer Torah, is there a problem or is there not a problem? So sometimes it looks like potentially there can be a problem from at a distance. So you go close with a magnifying glass to clarify what exactly is the issue. You go close, it's not touching. So now when I stand arms up, I can convince myself that it's not touching because I know what the mitzvah says. And that's fine. That's halacha. That is the issue of the magnifying glass. Okay, that's all it says. And now the kovah kads, I told you, we discussed before, it's a big machlokes ha'poskim. We're going to. You don't have to go look for. You don't have to go look for a microphone. They always have magnifying glasses. Always have. I don't know. Did they really? They did. I don't know. Is it true they didn't have magnifying glasses then? I don't know. Maybe you're right. Could be. Maybe they had better eyes. Better eyesight. Life was much simpler. The less you know, the better. But you're only looking to clarify. Many people tell you, especially Safran, they kill their eyes. Anyone that's in the Safran industry will tell you that Safran ruins your eyesight. Sure. So many people tell you, the reason why I'm using a magnifying glass is because I'm just trying to bring my eyes to the level of what my eyesight should be. I've heard this many times. My eyes, no, today people, almost everyone wears glasses. What, Hashem created everyone with glasses? How come 99% of the adult population is wearing some type of correction lenses? That's how Hashem created us? That you have to wear glasses? You come out of the crib, that's how you go. What happened to my Sibratius? mostly niskadnu hadoros.
They were married their wives.
Ooh.
That definitely gets a woo.
So what's the answer? It's one of two things. Either niskanu hadaros, or we abuse. We live in a society where we're very abusive of the way we use our eyes. So we develop a need to have glasses. So many people say the reason why I'm using magnifying glasses is because I'm just bringing my eyes to where they should be holding. I'm not trying to be machme. I just want to know what's going on. A clarification. According to Shulchan Aruch,
did not need those filters on this thing.
Well, there's another issue. Let's assume that there are. Okay, the reason why there are filters today is because the assumption is. Let's go through a little bit of the background. We have some of this over here. The assumption is there are copepods.
Right.
There are. And by the way, it all depends where you live. The copepods are growing, and it's a healthy thing that they should be there, and it's normal. They should be there. Question is, it depends where you live. The copepods will only be noticeable to your eye, to the naked eye, if the water stagnates, if there is a certain amount of time from the time it comes from the reservoir, parts of the year, times of the year is critical, and has to have enough time in its lifetime to grow. It takes time from the time they're born in the reservoir where they come from, the rivers, all the way in the Catskills until it gets down to your kitchen sink. It takes a number of time. The New York City system of
filtration.
Filtration, but the piping system is extremely complex. Some people, I'm not making up numbers, from the time it comes from the Catskills until it gets to your sink, it can be 3 days. And for your next, another person in Flatbush, it can be 6 days. Because certain parts of the system, the water stagnates much longer than other parts of the city. Someone who lives on a dead-end block, on a dead-end towards the outer part of a certain network of pipes, the water will stagnate in the pipes for a much longer period of time before it comes to your out of your kitchen sink. And that gives the copepods time to grow, and the time it comes out of the sink, it's noticeable. Whereas someone else who lives near an apartment building, a 10-story apartment building, and every 3 seconds someone's flushing the toilet, the water is flowing and flowing and flowing, and the people in this vicinity, the water has come is going through the system much faster. The copepods don't have time to grow to get to the point where you can actually see them. That's why there's such a big discrepancy between people who are saying this whole thing is nonsense. If you live in Manhattan, I don't see any copepods. If you live in Flatbush, in certain dead-end blocks, come to my house. No copepods. I will show you copepods. Come to my house, and it's true. I'll turn on the faucet, open up a bottle of water, and you can actually see them with the naked eye. Why is it that someone over there, 20 blocks away, you'll never find one thing, and over here you'll find? Because this person lives in a dead-end block. He's at a dead end, and everyone's on vacation. It's the summer. It's the hot summer. No one's on vacation. No one's flushing the toilet, and the copepods and the pipes, they grow, and they grow, and they grow, and you open up, and there it is. So this is a mitzias. No one is coming to question the mitzias. It will happen. You're going to find it. You may be very lucky that you'll go to your kitchen sink and you're going to look and you're not going to find nothing. Okay, so you live in a neighborhood where you're very fortunate, where the water flows very quickly, and at this time it's okay.
What?
No, it's not going to make a difference. Boiling water, that's what it says. Boiling water, because once it's there, it's not, even if it's dead, it's not going to make a difference. The shard's there. So
without your glasses, I understand it.
So that's what. Now there's another heter. The other heter is, we're going to see soon over here, is that if it's noilad, this is where it's natural, a sheretz that's noilad in its natural environment, only a sheretz hamayim, not a sheretz ha'etz, but a sheretz hamayim that's noilad, it's created in its natural habitat, it's not a sheretz. In order for it to be called a sheretz hamayim, that it's also, it has to be poiresh from the source where it was created. If you bend your head to a well where the copepod was formed, came into existence for the very first time, and you consume the drink the water, it's not also, it's smuter, because it has to be poiresh. The sheretz must leave its source of its environment where it was created. then it first it becomes awesome. So the big debate among the poskim is the network of pipes from the reservoirs to where it comes to the kitchen sink, is that called the being poiresh from its natural environment? According to Rabelsky, it's not. All of these pipes that connected the Mechaber is one system, and it's as if it's still living where in the environment where it was born, and therefore it's mutter. It's not called the Sheret Samayim. It's not called that. It's not called that. It's Pirish. It's not forbidden. Other poskim disagree. There's a very complex filtration system that it goes through in the city, and there are all these networks of pipes which are not mechubur to the karka, and they want to learn that it's and it's Parish. So you have a problem. So there are many issues. You may be very fortunate. Probably most people are very fortunate to be in a situation where it'll never get to the point where you'll see it. And that'll be 99% of the time. And you can be Samech on Rov. And even if you will see it, you have the heter that it was never Parish. So that's good enough for most people. And that really, I think of Moshe Paskin on that, and many Paskin say that it's good enough. That's why most people, as far as I know, don't have filters. And they don't think about it. However, in business, if you're working for, you have a store, so you always have to accommodate your customer. And that's why all of the businesses, all of the public institutions are under pressure for public relations to install a filter. But it's not necessarily that the people in the institutions are from the Machmirim. That's really what it's all about. Let's see some what it says over here. Okay, let's... I'm sure they have downstairs the catering hall.
They put it on the main line.
Well, no, we have filters.
Yeah, because you can't have a catering hall. You're not gonna. It's just a matter of a kemach yashan, and we have what bodek and chol of Yisrael. The average person is not interested in chol of Yisrael. They're not interested in chol in yashan. They're not interested in filters. It's an industry standard. Okay, let's see over here. Okay, Shemesan, Sichem Lizor, Lisan Derech Mapa, it says over here, Halacha Lamed Beis, Kishemesanim, Samayim, Sichem Lizor, Lisanam Derech Mapa, Shaloya, Efshar, Lavor, Afilu, Toilo, Dak, Shabadakin. You need to use a mapa. You have all these different numbers. I'm not familiar with the technology. You go by a filter, they have all these numbers. How much they remove, so you have to make sure that it does a very good job. Lama Gimel. Chaymet Shetzliya, now we come to vinegar. Vinegar which became wormy. So you have vinegar. Now these are some important halachas which shed light on these in Yonim. Shetzliya, also Al Yidei Sinon, it's not going to help. Even if you're going to do even if you're going to put a filter. Kitola Dak Shebedakin Shenesava B'chaymetz Oiver Derech Kol Mapa. That's the Mitzias. Unbelievable. Then vinegar. Even the worms are so small, it will pass through the filter. They are sinun gerui gore, the yoisetov sholosan, makes it worse. I don't know how it makes it worse, but that's what it says. Ki hatoylo hamishave be mashkim shebekelim einay nesu. Look what that's what the point makes it worse. This is the very critical kitchuchduch. He says this is the heter. This is the heter why many people do not require filters. Ki hatoylo, a worm hamishave that came into existence bimashkim shebekelim einay nesu calls manchle perash. As long as the worm has not separated from its environment, is not aser. The if you're going to put a sieve, a filter in vinegar, in the process of filtering the worm, the bug, it's the bug is going to leave the water. It's going to rest on the filter, on the strain, whatever it is, the achar kach yachzor, and then it's going to return. So using a filter, you're making it worse. Now he's talking about a certain type of filter for vinegar. I don't know if this is nogea, the filters that we have, the modern filters are not necessarily problematic. The hamuvchor, what's the best thing to do? If you really want to filter, he says you should boil it. Boil the vinegar first. The same mitzias. He's saying the Metzius is that if you go and you kill it by boiling it, you're going to kill the bug, and then when you filter, it will remain on the filter. It's not going to have the urge to dive back into the water because it's dead. So this is a solution. Again, this is not again us. This is something which I don't know in different times. Okay, now this is very interesting. This is the difference between the bugs of Mayim, bugs of the earth. It's important to understand this principle. The next halacha. Okay, but what have we learned so far? A sheretz hamayim is only osur when it's poirish. As long as it's not poirish from its original environment, it's not osur. Water in the pipe, in the New York City piping system, is a poirish from its environment. But by the way, in Lakewood, they were very disappointed in Lakewood. I heard this from someone. They were so disappointed. They were looking so hard to find bugs in the water. They brought in NASA with the best microscopes to go to find Ula Yirachim. We'll find the bug. We can ask all the water in Lakewood. The Bnei Tov is so happy. It would be such a mamish a yom tovul rabbanan to aser, and it's just unbelievable. They couldn't find any bugs. The water in New Jersey does not come from the same source as the water in New York, and there are just no copepods. Just the mitzis. So in New Jersey, there's no need. I guess you know why. You know why? Because on the highway, there's only one lane. It wasn't enough Fort Lee, you know, it wasn't enough to go that direction. The bugs couldn't make it to Lakewood. Christy, that's right, because of Christy, that's why they have no bugs in the water in Lakewood. So there are different types of water. Okay, now that's the law when it comes. Now here's something where people get confused. This is something which is a little bit different. When it comes to the sherets of, what about a bug in an apple? So you will likely want to expand this principle the same way when it comes to sherets for eights. If I have an apple, right? Let's say you go to the store, you go to the whatever store you buy your fruit in, and you take a bite out of the apple, and look at that. There's a bug crawling in the apple. Are you allowed to eat a worm crawling in the apple? Are you allowed to eat the worm? So the answer is it depends. Are you allowed to eat the worm? Are you allowed to eat the worm? I just told you that any sherets that does not separate it from its natural habitat is not osur. That's only true when it comes to water bugs. Bugs in water. When it comes to bugs that appear on products of the earth, it's just the opposite. Now, I don't mean just the opposite 100%. I mean is that if the bug began to develop, the worm began to develop when the fruit was still attached to the tree, then it was already called a sheretz hasheretz al ha'oretz. Different set of rules. I have an apple. The apple is attached to the tree. The tree is attached to the ground, obviously. And now, and as we speak, we take a X-ray, and we discover there's a little worm roaming around inside the apple. That is called, right now, this moment in time, a sheretz hasheretz al haaretz. Because the apple is attached to the tree, the tree is attached to the earth, the sheretz is crawling. It's sheretz al haaretz. So that worm would be forbidden with all of the chumras. Because that's a real... When is a worm in a fruit mutter? When you are absolutely certain that the worm first began to develop after you took the apple off the tree.
How do you know that?
Exactly. Because you do not know, it's impossible. And that's why all bugs in the fruit are awesome.
You can move the worm and you can eat apples.
If what?
You can move the worm and you can eat the apple?
Yes, of course. Just take out the worm, move the worm. Absolutely. The only way you can tell is dried fruit. What do I mean dried fruit? I don't mean all times of dried fruit. If the fruit is more than 12 months old. If the fruit is more than 12 months, so maybe there's such a thing as aged fruit. I'm not familiar with all these things. And you find the bug in the fruit, it's mutter. Because there's no such thing, according to halacha, as a creature that does not have a bone that can live more than 12 months. That's a halachic principle. Any living organism that does not have bones in their body maybe even if you'll find in halacha, it cannot live more than 12 months. So if you have a fruit that is 13 months old, and you cut it open, and look at that, inside the fruit there is a worm that is crawling, it's mutter to eat the worm. Because that worm was never sheretz al haaretz. Because the only time it could have been sheretz al haaretz was when the fruit was attached to the tree. But the fruit was attached to the tree more than 12 months ago. I don't know. I guess there is, because it says in the Gemara.
Collect it and sell it.
Okay, so let's see what it says. Toilayim, let's see. Toilayim hagedelim b'peros b'oidam b'chubo. Okay, worms that grow on fruits while the tree is still, the fruit is still attached, asurim. It's also why, oh, but you're going to ask me one moment ago when we discussed the sheretz hamayim, the bugs in the water, there it was, mutter. No, that's water. Water is water, and eitz is eitz. Because it's still called the sheretz ha-sheretz al ha'aretz. Ulepa'amim nimsa b'pri. Sometimes you'll find it in a fruit. V'chein b'poilin v'kinyos, different types of beans. Kimin nekuda shechayra v'hu mokam shehischel ha'toylo lehisrakeim. That's the place where the worm is beginning to form. V'tzarech lidloy misham b'oimek. You have to remove that little black dot. To also k'may ha'tolas atzma, he holds that part where it's beginning to take room is very machmer. The kishkunach is very machmer. This little teeny black dot already is called in halacha a worm and has to be removed. Okay, lamed hey, one more halacha. Kol pri shadako la'atliya ba'oda mukhabor. Any fruit that has a derech for the worms to form when it's mukhabor im avru olav shneim also chodesh mishin nitlash. Okay, there are such fruits, I guess. You can detach it from the tree, now you can let it sit for 12 months. Mutter. Ki kol b'riya she'ein bo etzem eina miskayemesh neim osu chodesh. It's impossible. Uchuvar nases ke'afra ba'alma, it would have turned into dust. And now that you find a worm, it must be that it came afterwards. U'mishum chshash shemet liu b'talush tzrichim levodkam, because of the concern that shema hit liu b'tzulif, if you have now a fruit, and there's a concern that maybe it took root, maybe it flew, when it was talush. Umishum chasha shemo hitliu betalush tzrichim levodkan ulahashlech atoloyim
vehayav. The opposite.
Wait.
You have a chashash. Maybe it was when it was mechubar.
Oh, okay. Kol pri shadarko latliya be'oda mechubar. Im avu olav shtei masu chodesh mishenit lash muter. Ki kol bria. If there's a concern that it took, that it already formed, and now you've detached its mut. Okay, that's okay. So he's discussing. First, he's discussing fruits where there's no concern that worms began to form after. Generally speaking, from what he seems to be saying is that worms only form when it's attached to the ground. When it's attached. So if you have fruit, and it's very common in these fruit to find worms. It's very common. And you find that's the metzias. So all the fruit is asar. But if this fruit has already been in storage for 12 months, then the fruit is mutter. Because it already turned into dust. Because there's no way that this worm, even if it's true there was a worm that was roaming around, it did form when it was attached to the ground, and it was a sheretz, ha-sheretz, ha-laretz. Now that it's been 12 months since I've detached it from the ground, even if there was a worm inside that would have been usher, by now it has died and decomposed and turned into dust, and now it's mutter. But there might be another problem. Another problem is sometimes you have dried fruit that's been sitting around for a long time, and they become wormy. New rodents begin to form, and those are usher. Worms. And those are also usher. So then you have to also make an inspection, because that would also be sheretz ha-sheretz al-aretz. Let's see. Not necessarily. Right? They're different types. Could be that the worms that you're finding now are worms that came from the outside, which penetrated.
Right.
So those would be also, because those are not worms from. Those are different types of worms. But let's see. Maybe there's a concern that right now they became wormy now. There was new worms form now. We have to inspect them. On the outside. Because anything that you find on the outside certainly is going to be problematic. Because anything we find on the outside of the fruit, where did it come from? It came from the ground.
If you have a fruit that's sitting in storage for 12 months and you find a worm that's crawling on the outside of the fruit, where did that worm come from? It came from the ground. It didn't come from the fruit itself. And then what you do is you put in boiling water, and if inside of the fruit there is a worm, that's mutter. V'lo tifrosh v'en lismech alzeh rak b'kidnius v'adoshim v'chadoyim v'davka lach Hashem osa chodesh. So anything that's on the outside is osir, but anything that's on the inside after 12 months would be mutter, because anything that's on the inside is never sheretz al haaretz. So what you're supposed to do is take the fruit and soak the fruit in water, and by boiling water, and that will kill any worms and cleanse on the outside of the fruit, and anything that remains alive inside anyway is not a problem, because those worms were never roichesh al haaretz. All right, we'll do more blinet of this tomorrow. We'll stop here.